You've been listening to Flashpoints on KBOO Portland. Welcome to KBOO this morning. It's 10:59 and the Dirtbag is coming up next. Today on the Dirtbag, they're going to be talking about growing citrus in Oregon and the Dirtbag Dictionary. And if Jim can make it in, he's just arrived. Jim will be here to talk about Jim's Farm Follies. So stay tuned for that. That's all coming up in just a moment. It's just about 11 o'clock. And we're going to listen to a couple of messages and then we'll get right to Dirtbag. Thanks a lot for turning into KBOO today. KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Hay Fever, produced by the Portland Actors Conservatory and running from December 2nd to December 18th. In Hay Fever, the Bliss family have all invited house guests for the weekend. Artistic eccentricity and flirtation are misinterpreted and hilarity ensues. Again, that's Hay Fever, produced by the Portland Actors Conservatory and running December 2nd to December 18th. The play takes place at 1436 Southwest Montgomery Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the home page under Community Events.
Give to KBOO today during our end-of-year match. Starting November 1st and wrapping up December 31st, donations from all new and increasing members will be matched one-to-one up to $15,000 from the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Give an extra gift today or become a member, and your membership will be doubled to support independent community media and citizen journalism at KBOO. Thank you.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Skyline Tavern Project, a not-for-profit historic saloon at the edge of Forest Park dedicated to supporting art and ecology through live music, food, and horseshoes, 8031 Northwest Skyline Boulevard and skytav.com. Also by the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Well, we have arrived at the very latest possible second Wednesday of the month.
It's true. We couldn't
the
get
14th.
Much later.
Nope. Right. Cannot do it. If we went to the 15th, that would be the third Wednesday. So we had 5 weeks this time. In any event, I'm still Glenn Andreessen here beside you.
And until I'm still Jim Gilbert.
Coming in from the Southland, where no precipitation was falling yet, I take it.
Nothing. I haven't seen a thing.
Nope. Well, that's the way we're hoping. Now, I rode my bike. Tammy drove, but wondered if she was going to be able to get home at noonish. And Jim is picking up somebody at the airport at 1:30-ish or whatever.
Just exactly when things are supposed to start getting to be fun. So
yeah.
We'll see.
So our theme today is cold weather. Or at least that's one of them. All my tunes today actually have to do with cold weather. Or just cold in general. What have we got going here? Anything from the Home Orchard Society? Jim, nothing this time of
year. This time of year, everybody's...
December.
No, not really. People are making fruitcakes and stuff.
That's right. We will talk about a little bit about stored produce, whether that's squash, onions, potatoes, or apples, or persimmon. I still have a lot of persimmon.
Do you like fruitcake, Glenn?
I do.
You know, sometimes it's good to be a joke. You know, people joke about fruitcake.
Yeah.
But fruitcake made with dried fruit and nuts and all, it's one of my favorite things. It's so good.
We could put persimmon in those, but I don't think they ever do, at least around here.
Yeah. You could put, you know, dates, you can figs, dried figs, just prunes.
What did you bring with you there today, Jim?
I brought a few olives.
All right. We thought we might have olives as our plant of the month, but Jim went with citrus instead because it's kind of appropriate for this time of weather, this time of year and this weather, you got to do certain things.
Right. It was a tough call, but citrus is definitely a topic that people are interested in, and it's winter fruit. It's one of the few fruits that can ripen right now, be ripe right now.
Speaking of which, my family used to make, at this time of year, holiday candied orange peel. Did you ever have that, Tammy? Yeah. Yeah, Tammy has.
Yeah.
I remember that. My mom hasn't made it for years. Of course, she hasn't made a lot of things for years. She gave that up.
Yeah.
Cooking. I don't blame her. Okay, we will talk about cold weather stuff once again. We'll just hammer it home on what to do, mostly with potted plants. That's the a major concern now. I did look at the extended forecast at the National Weather Service, and we're forecast to be down to 22 in Portland. And that means, what, 16 on the farm?
It depends. If it's cloudy, it wouldn't be much colder. But if it's clear and 22 in Portland, we can be 8 degrees colder than that. So
yeah.
It would be 14, which would be right on the edge of when we have to really do serious plant protection.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. We have a stumper that has to do with our new feature. Yes, the Dirtbag Dictionary, we're calling that. And we'll define a word that you may or may not be familiar with by name, but you probably are by gardening practices. Today's word, dioecious. So you can throw in a little umlaut there if you'd like to. Dioecious. Or, it's not a diet. What's that thing where you put the little squiggly line over the umlaut? Well, that's from another language. No, this is a an English term when you the word. Or I-U. Somebody will tell us that. Well, that's kind of close, but it might be. I'm no English major. Should have asked my wife. Or my friend Whitey down in Eugene. He would know that. And we will talk about what Jim's been doing in the last month. You were traveling?
We did a little bit of traveling. I was in sunny Southern California for 3 days.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
That was pretty much fun.
No. And just for since Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I was in the Bay Area participating in a beekeeping conference.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a completely different format in that it wasn't a standard lecture, listen, or a presentation and listen. Instead, we just had one keynote, and then we had breakout sessions where there were what were called thought leaders, which were respected researchers from around the United States or the world. And then we discussed certain topics, and then we had to condense what we talked about for an hour and 15 minutes down to 1 minute. Somebody from the group had 1 minute to present to the group.
Wow.
As the discussion leader said, there's nothing closer to death than to somebody to drone on and on about what's going on or what they're talking about. So that worked well. There were, I think, 28 states represented in 6 countries. So kind of a who's who in beekeeping.
The weather was nice?
Yes. It was the mid to upper 50s.
Yeah.
For there.
And where I was probably mid to upper 60s.
Yeah, a little bit further south.
A little further south.
What I did notice a lot, too, as I went down there, as I checked when the sun set. And it was, I think it was a good 20 to 25 minutes later there than here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was a little nicer to, yeah. Nice to have a little longer, more daylight, half an hour daylight maybe.
Yeah. Well, I walked through the Santa Monica Farmers Market, which I try to do every winter when I'm down. I go down once a winter, and it's a really fun place to go to where you run into just about everything, you know, that you'd ever run into up here. In fact, I brought home sapotes, avocados of different types. There's pineapple guavas. There's just lots of incredible stuff.
Well, bees were visiting plants down there. We heard one tree that was just humming, eucalyptus.
Wow.
So it's a different climate.
Yep.
For sure. All right, but on task here, we do invite you to call us with your gardening questions. Have anything to talk about in the garden? There are some tasks that we can be doing this time of year, but cold weather is going to be dominating it for today. You got to get things kind of prepared today or it's going to be cold will have set in. But 503-231-8187. POTM, plant of the month.
Right.
Citrus. What are we talking about when we're talking about citrus? Can we grow them all here? Grow kumquats?
You know, I haven't found one yet we can't grow.
Isn't maybe, that astounding?
And you know, because the way that most people do it is to grow citrus in a container and leave it outdoors in the spring, summer, and fall and bring it inside in the winter.
Well, would I be off to say that's the only way to do it? I mean, can you put them in the ground? Or
you could put them in the ground and make I've heard of people making like sort of tents, you know, out of plastic, covering, like to sort of build like a tiny little greenhouse, put electric light in it or even Christmas lights or something.
But
hang
it does,
on the tree.
You can't just put it in the ground and...
No.
Like a banana tree will survive, but it may die back.
Right. There are a couple of citrus species that you can do that, but the ones that have good fruit, really tasty fruit, you have to, they're not hardy enough for that. And the trick in indoor, bringing them, you know, from outdoors to indoors, you want to put them in some light. They don't like, they're not something you want to have in the shade. They're a growing plant. They've got leaves, and if you put them in darkness, they'll drop the leaves.
And you're talking about natural light.
Or artificial
you
light.
You could
will
do
work
that
too.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Any good source of light. And my ideal would be like a south exposure wall with a good sized window or door that gives plenty of light.
A window and a door.
Yeah. And another, you know, some other things that really are important to pay attention to. And one thing is not to overwater the plant, because even though it's got leaves and in a sense, it's growing. It's really not actively growing.
There's not a lot of light
in the winter.
Allow that.
Yeah, and heat too. You know, and unless you were trying to grow it in a very warm environment, normally it won't. It really is not growing. And the biggest danger is watering too much, because if you do that, you'll drown the roots and cause root rot, and eventually the plant will possibly die from it.
So we're just trying to get it through a cold season.
Right.
We're not forcing it by bringing it inside, or we don't want to force it, so to speak.
No, it will help citrus, and citrus ripens its fruit in the winter, typically. Most citrus plants do. I mean, they have a fairly long time between bloom time and ripening time. Bringing them indoors helps save the fruit, too. If you're lucky, your citrus plant will have a lot of fruit on it. You bring it in October, even early November, and then that fruit will ripen in December, January.
And when does it put out blossoms?
Well, it starts blossoming
even when there's fruit on it.
Even when there's fruit on it, yeah. So probably February, March, blooming before you put it outside. The issue with that, of course, then is if the bloom time's late enough, then you can put it outside and get some bee action. But if you don't do that, then it's nice to be, since you're probably not going to invite the bees into your house, using a small brush to move pollen from flower to flower is a good idea to get a really good fruit size.
Uh-huh. Well, we have a call, Jim. Oh, two now.
Great.
Okay. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
What you got?
Okay, so I have a couple of fig trees that were brought up from California, planted into my garden after being in a pot for a year. And they're in kind of a windy area, and I'm on a farm in Cornelius.
Okay.
Last year I covered them with cardboard. When I knew the weather was getting down to the 20s. should I do that again this year? Just about a few days ago, all the leaves fell off, finally.
Yeah, it's dormant.
Yeah. So figs are remarkably hardy. Actually, you can see a fig that's fairly mature. I mean, if it was a very young plant with a lot of green wood, I'd be more concerned about it. But if it's pretty mature, it can stand temperatures down to 5 degrees or below.
Okay.
And even I've heard this can be the case, but I've never seen it happen. If it does freeze, die off, it generally doesn't kill the plant, and the fig will just send up new shoots.
Right.
No, but I've never, sorry, Jim, yeah. But I've never seen that happen.
1989-90, Glenn.
Oh. Well, let's see here. I don't know if I had a fig in then or not.
It may not have been cold enough in Portland, but in our place, it got to zero, and that froze the fig.
So I'm thinking this fig is like one of the more tender types. It's not like a brown fig or anything like that. I'm thinking it's mission fig.
Well, there's two things to think about with that. One, the figs, in general, all of the figs have the same degree of hardiness.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yeah, so that's not an issue.
I thought it was.
Yeah, no. And mission, unfortunately, is not one that is very successful in our area. And where you live, if you, I would suggest if you want to get figs reliably, and this is one of my favorite fruits, is you plant Desert King or King Fig. Because,
oh, I know, but I glean fruit every year, and there's like 5 huge desert fig trees that I just go and I glean and and I take them to the Saturday market.
You don't need,
you know, when they come ripe. I mean, you know, you got to catch them when they're ripe.
It's a short window.
Yeah.
Well, it can be fairly lengthy, but each fruit itself is off the tree.
Oh, yeah, I've introduced figs to at least 100 people in the last 3 years.
Excellent.
Good.
Because I'm passionate about figs. Grew up with a fig tree in my back. Grew up with 20 fruit trees in my backyard in Los Angeles.
Wow, good for you.
Well, my dad was a horticulturist, and he kind of taught me how to graft at a young age. And so, like, I had my own plum trees, and we had all kinds of fruit in the backyard. But the things that we never had was cherries for some reason. So we had to go up into the high desert valleys to go get our cherries every year.
Well, would you like to speculate, Jim, why there wasn't cherries?
Possibly because there's not enough heat for chilling. Enough cold.
There was not enough cold. That's what my father told me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We were able to have peaches and nectarines, other stone fruits, but for some reason the cherries, he just decided, I think after trial and error for 5 years, to screw it and drive, you know, and pick up the cherries from somewhere else.
Yeah, well, that's
good.
But
I'm planting a fruit tree every year in my yard. And
how many are you up to, you said? That was where you
grew up. I have 2 fig trees currently in the ground.
Okay, so you're on 2 years you've lived there?
No, I've lived here 3 years, but the trees are, you know, like young saplings, or I don't know how to describe them. They're only about 3 feet tall. The diameter at the soil level is about 2 inches.
That's pretty
big
for
a
3-foot tall plant.
Well, we started with some really big twigs that were brought down, and then I started them in water, and then I potted them up and got them growing a really nice root ball, and then I transplanted them into the soil. I'm very good with plants, but I don't know a lot of things. I know a lot of things.
I'm a little concerned here about if you just took a cutting from a tree and then stuck it, the scion wood, we'll say, in water. Is that?
Yes, what I did.
Yeah, that's going to be you don't know what it's going to be. Is that right, Jim?
Well, you know, if it came from a variety
that she knows,
that you know, then it'll be the same variety.
But it will be a big tree.
On figs, you don't. There's no.
Well, this wasn't fig. Is that what you said?
Yes, fig.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, we were thinking about the other stone fruits.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No. No. I got my other ones. I get. I'm a Tualatin Valley Garden Club member, and there are several members who actually do the scion wood thing over in Canby every year.
Uh huh. Great.
And and then graft them onto a good rootstock and then sell them to other members for really cheap. So,
oh, that's good.
So that's why I have fruit trees.
Well, it sounds like you're having fun.
Oh, I just have too much fun.
Good.
Well, great. Thanks.
I'm learning all the time. I actually was given a master gardener manual from Portland. Somebody wanted to get rid of it, and it's just a wealth of knowledge in this giant notebook. Well, I couldn't afford to take the course. That's why they gave it to me.
Well, you'll have plenty of time to read it in the next few days.
Oh, yes. Winter time.
Thanks for the call, Victoria.
Thank you.
Okay, David, you're next. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How you guys doing?
Fine. We're here.
Good. I enjoy your show very much.
Thanks.
Great.
Hey, couple questions. One is, I have a lemon tree, a Meyer lemon, in about a 25, 30-gallon pot. And I've moved it into the garage for the winter, along with a couple of other trees. I also have a bay leaf and an olive tree that are potted. And my question was, I want to grow the lemon tree and keep it in the pot, but be able to give it enough growth and good production going, you know, as it gets a little bit bigger. So I'm wondering if you have any pruning suggestions on maximizing the growth and production.
How big is the tree now?
It's probably, if you measure from the soil level, it's probably 1.5 to 2 feet.
Hi. So it's pretty small in that pot, right? I mean, if the pot is big and the plant sounds
Yeah. I'm expecting it to get in the neighborhood of 4 to 6 feet.
Uh-huh. And it hasn't borne any fruit yet, or is it starting?
Yeah. No. Actually, it bore fruit last year.
Great.
And it's doing it again this year. And my thought was that I was going to wait until the lower limbs of the tree finish with their lemons, and then trim all those off and get it to grow up and out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a reasonable strategy. I wouldn't take off a whole lot. I mean, if you took a third of the tree, you could prune that pretty safely.
You weren't thinking of that much, were you, David?
No, right. I was just getting the lower limbs out of the area of the rim of the pot.
Sure, yeah, that sounds good. And my sense is you probably have that. That's probably on Flying Dragon rootstock. I don't know where you got the plant from, but the one we use at our nursery is Flying Dragon because it makes a very early. It's a very dwarfing tree, but also very early to come into bearing.
Okay. Actually, well, my rootstock came from a place called Fox Hollow Nursery down in Eugene, because that's where I live.
Hmm.
And he grows his own. He has his own rootstocks and a wide variety of stuff. So, but okay, good.
Good.
Well, it's good to know I'm on the right track there. Thought process.
Yeah.
Bon appetit.
Enjoy.
Yeah, hey, my other question was, can you recommend any fertilizer or soil amendments for olive trees?
Well, olives don't require any particular material. I would say just a good organic potting fertilizer for pots. You can buy that in garden centers. It doesn't require acid soil.
Okay.
So a good organic material with all the good stuff in it should work fine.
Okay, I didn't know if there was anything particular that might boost its growth or help it stay healthy.
And maybe top dress, since this is a potted plant, top dress with compost.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't,
okay, good.
And don't do that till spring. I mean, there's no reason.
Yeah, right, not now.
No,
yeah.
No. Do you know of any books that I can look up or purchase about processing olives?
If you go online, that's where I got my information. In fact, I brought some olives that I myself processed a couple of years ago. I still have them in a brine in my refrigerator. They're getting pretty salty tasting, but they're still good.
We have that at our next break.
There's several. If you go, I think University of California has an online publication that talks about doing that.
Okay, great. I'll look that up.
All right, David, great. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yep, stay warm.
Okay, you too.
Okay, well, we'll go into our our first musical selection here, and as I mentioned, these all have to do with cold, and this first one, which really doesn't have anything to do with icy weather, but the title could be interpreted that, and that's what I've done with this Cold Blood tune called Watch Your Step. Lydia Pence and Cold Blood.
I think we need to find a new title for our show here, Glenn. It's got to have something to do with music in it. I mean, Glenn's Music and Dirtbag or something like that.
Yes. I might have to reclassify it then, and then they'll kick me off the air. Wait a minute, you're not a music show. You're supposed to be public affairs.
That's right. Right.
Okay, a little bit more on citrus, which will tie us into our cold weather.
Right. So the main thing with, as we mentioned before, citrus aren't hardy. And if you've got one sitting on your front porch and enjoying it, it won't enjoy it much longer. So bring it in. That's really important. And again, just watch the watering. Don't think that it needs water all the time. Only water when you can determine by feeling the soil that it's getting dry.
And depending on where it is, it would probably dry out quicker inside than outside, of course.
It will, of course. Yeah. And if it's in a warm place, it'll dry faster than if it's in a cool room.
Right.
Best place for it's a cool room if you've got one with light.
Would they likely bring in, you know, aphids or something like that?
Well,
mealybugs, thrips?
If they had them on it, it could do that.
Yeah.
The biggest issue I've heard of people talking about with citrus is scale, which is these little, you know, you'll see them on the stems and sometimes on the leaves are little, like little caps, little brown bumps.
And there's and varmints under there.
And there's a living creature that will send out young ones occasionally. But we control that with dormant oil spray. Like neem oil should work as well.
I just wondered if one would, erring on the side of caution, treat it before it comes in prophylactically. These are pretty harmless materials.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It might be too cold already.
Yeah, I would just look at the plant.
Okay.
If it doesn't have anything obvious, I would just bring it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best course of action anyway.
Right. And then so going into the other potted plants.
Yes.
Any
we mentioned this last week, or a month, but that was 5 weeks ago.
That's right. I'm sure.
It's colder now than then.
That's right. And this is the real winter now coming on, and, you know, Arctic blasts and things that are being talked about. And in a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people have plants in pots and they're outdoors, and generally that's fine. The roots of a plant can stand cold temperatures down to freezing or even somewhat below. But what happens in a pot is that it's because it's sitting up above the ground, the whole thing can freeze. And if the temperature doesn't get above freezing during the day, which hopefully we haven't got into that kind of weather yet.
But it's pretty, it's...
It's possible.
It's in the forecast anyway. Yeah. I mean, high of 31 one day.
Yeah. That probably still not really into that super bad thing. But yeah, when it drops, it's a good idea to protect the pot. Try to keep it from freezing.
And what I do is, well, for some, even this morning, I got back from my run. All right, jog. Okay, plod. I move them to, I have a stairs to my basement. It's not accessible from the house. It's accessible from outside the basement. Old house, 1919. Coming up on a century house here. But anyway, I put them, lined the steps with the more sensitive things, I thought, further down. And just because it doesn't, the wind doesn't blow through there, and I might be warmer down there just because it's in the down in the earth, kind of. Although my wife said, well, doesn't cold water, cold weather, cold air, you know, go down, fill in pockets and things like that. But when I see the temperature, I mean, the growth of things, and it just doesn't freeze at the bottom of that.
Right.
We had this freezing rain last week. I had to go down to the basement a couple of times, and one time, boy, I slipped and hit the dirt. Well, the steps anyway. So it was freezing on the steps anyway, but that was freezing rain.
Right, right. You know, if you have a pot sitting on soil, it's going to have more heat coming up from the ground than if it's sitting on a deck or a porch, because there's no...
Or any pedestal.
Yeah, anything that's holding above the ground, that's particularly dangerous. So if you can, if the least to do would be to put things on the ground, and you'll notice if it's on the ground, you can feel underneath the pot. It won't be frozen underneath it. There's still heat coming up from the soil into the pot. That's probably pretty good when temperatures even go as low as 20. You know, if it's overnight, even below that would probably be okay. But if you get to, like you said, below freezing during the day, that soil in the pot's going to freeze. And in that case, wrapping the pot with something. You can use anything, you know, like an old sleeping bag even, or just something to try to insulate that potting soil from the cold air.
Could you, and I've done this, is throw wood chips around it?
Sure.
You know, just kind of as an insulating.
Sure.
Yeah, wood chips. Sawdust, or dig a hole and just put the pot in the hole.
Right. You could put hay, straw.
Yeah.
So anything that will, well, and it doesn't take much. I mean, for us warm-blooded creatures, we're not going to probably find ourselves very comfortable in a bed of straw in our yard, but.
Plants are different. Plants are
different. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And my neighbor or a friend who, where I have bees at his place, he's become a friend. He said, or he potted me up a pawpaw, just a little thing he dug up from the root, you know, a sucker, and it grew, you know, had a dozen leaves on it or something like that. But it's still in a pot. Are they pretty tender that way? I need to move that one.
The top or the roots are you speaking about?
Well, just both.
Yeah. If it's a really small plant, it'd probably be good to give it some shelter.
Yeah.
You know,
Okay. Well, it's small.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, 8 inches of growth.
Right. If it's got just like a little pencil-sized plant, I mean, they're hardy in their native environment, but if it was growing well into the fall, and of course we had a pretty warm fall.
Yeah. Okay. Got to remember to change that. Okay. Well, if you have questions on cold weather, anything related to your particular plants, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. Coincidentally, that is the same number if you want to take a stab at our garden stumper. So, Tammy, here we go. I think we're going. Here we go. Well, this has to do with our word of the month, the dictionary, the dirtbag dictionary, dioecious, and we'll get into that here right now, talking about that. But we'll mostly be talking about fruit trees and others. But I would like to ask for you to name one example of a dioecious vegetable. That is, that there are male and female plants.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Male and female plants of vegetables, not fruit. 503-231-8187. And there are some that are, two that are very common, and one that's maybe less common. I only have three, so.
Mm.
Okay, dioecious. And just very simply, it's having male and female reproductive organs or parts in separate plants. That's it. Now, Jim would say maybe the most common one might be kiwi. You know, people know that, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. If you want to grow kiwi, you got to plant a male and you got to plant a female.
Uh-huh. And so what that leads to is several things. One is a dependency on pollination from insects or birds or humans sometimes. It requires that because the pollen is sticky, but it has to move from one plant to another. Now, there are, when you have, a perfect, Jim is looking like, what are you talking about here? When you have a perfect flower, that means what, Jim? A little quiz here.
Sure. That means it has both the flower contains, has both the male and female parts.
Right. So what that would mean is that it would be less likely that you would need insect pollination. Not exclusively, of course, by any stretch, but it would be easier for the fruit to get pollinated because the pollen only has to move a little ways. You know, from the outside males to the inside females.
Right.
That's all it does.
Like little pollen carriers will take care of that, right?
That's right. And that could be ants or beetles. Actually, beetles worldwide are the biggest pollinator. Not fruits and everything, but flowers and whatnot. And why hummingbirds, that could work. And they don't have to have real hairy bodies to carry that pollen very far. The reason that bees, for example, are very good pollinators is because they're hairy bodies. The pollen gets stuck to their hair, and then when they travel to the female plant, for example, then the pollen, which is sticky, will stick to the stigma. And voila, we might have pollination, and we might have then fertilization. But two different things. Maybe we'll talk about that in another dirtbag dictionary.
Pollination is just plants. It's just amazing, the diversity and how it all works.
And that it works is just incredible.
Yeah. So what I wondered about when you mentioned this was, is there a dioecious fruiting plant or nut tree that has wind pollinated?
Yes. Many. Well, I don't know about nut trees, but filberts.
But they have male and female flowers on the same plant.
Yes, they're not dioecious.
Right.
But
that's what I was kind of wondering. Is there any of the dioecious ones that are wind pollinated?
I don't think so. But they could be because I have some examples here.
Aha, I have one.
Yes.
Seaberry.
It's dioecious?
It has male and female plants and it's wind pollinated.
Okay. Well, monoecious, that's kind of the opposite, is when you have both male and female flowers in the same specimen, while dioecious plants produce male and female flowers on different specimens. This means that while a monoecious plant may pollinate itself, the word there, may pollinate itself, dioecious plants require a partner to achieve pollination. Most common landscaping plants are monoecious and require no partner for fertilizing their ova. How about that? Now, one of the benefits of a dioecious plant is that there's greater genetic diversity. Because you're getting you have two different parents. You know, of course, your ma plant is right there, but then the paw comes from someplace else. Right. So one example of a dioecious plant is holly. Kind of coming into the season when holly makes an appearance on tables and such. You might imagine only the female plant produces berries, but it requires two different trees. And we're not even talking about species here. That's different than, say, apples.
Right.
Because they are, they're monoecious, perfect flowers. They have pollen and nectar in the flower, but the pollen from the same flower is not going to pollinate itself.
Right.
And there's just incredible mechanisms that plants have developed so they don't.
Right.
All right. We'll come back to this. If you have a comment.
Well, I'm just wondering, what were they thinking?
Well, they have different ways of thoughts, you know, because they both seem to survive.
Right.
We do have a caller. Oh, Marilyn with a question, not an answer. That's okay. Marilyn, what's on your mind?
Would you still plant garlic?
Well, if the weather was better, I would. I think you could, but it's not. Now, I was gone for several days, and I looked back, and I saw that the temperature was 47 degrees for both days that I was gone.
Hmm.
I would have planted it then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you have to lose, although the ground is probably a little cold now, or frozen? Jim, yeah. What do you think?
It was 29 this morning at my place. I wouldn't say the ground is frozen yet. I mean, I think you could do it.
Yeah, okay, great. Thanks.
I would cover it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Put some straw or something.
Yes, yeah. Right. Yeah. But then take it off after this cold weather is passed because, you know, when it's cold, you know, below freezing for 3 or 4 days, and it may, you know, bump up, to 33 or something like that, and it may be sunny, which would help warm the soil more than just the temperature. That's pretty cold for a new little clove in the ground there.
Okay. So plant it and cover it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, and you should know that, you know, my garlic is, you know, 6-8 inches tall. You know, so you're a little behind the game, but what do you have to lose? It's just garlic.
Yeah, right. Okay, great. Thank you.
All right.
You know, I really liked Marilyn's question. Here we are, you know, going off on our dioecious
yeah,
things.
Yeah, right.
And just a basic question, can I plant garlic? I wish we knew that was coming. It would have been fun to talk about it earlier.
All right. Okay.
Oh, sure.
Well, anyway, we're still looking for examples of dioecious vegetables. What are some other examples of dioecious fruits, Jim? Well, quick search shows is mulberry plants, although that was kind of somewhat surprising to Jim, so we don't know that to be the case.
Yeah, I'm not.
I mean, they could be. The word here was may, you know. That
right. Somebody wrote it down, so they must have some reason for thinking so, but I've never.
And holly plants, I know that to be true. We see that juniper trees, ash trees, persimmon trees.
Yeah, there definitely. There are male, as we talked about, there are male and female persimmon trees. However, most persimmons that we grow are self-fertile and don't require the male. And if you don't have the male, then you don't have seeds in the fruit, which is also sort of a nice thing.
Oh, yeah.
So,
With persimmon,
right.
Well, that could be because the persimmon tree that I harvested hundreds of fruit from, no seeds.
Yep. That's self-fertile.
Excellent. Okay, let's go back to the phone. Good morning, Sam. You got an answer?
I got an issue.
Oh. We'll take it.
So they say you have to have two cherry trees. Is that in the neighborhood?
Well, it's within flight range of the insect pollinators. And cherries are weird anyway, in that you have separate levels of trees. That's what,
yeah,
don't
think,
they? And if you have trees within an individual level, they will not pollinate each other.
Yeah.
And some of the most common trees are within a level, like Bing and okay. Whatever,
that's
whatever.
My stab.
Pardon?
That's my stab at it. I'll take it.
Oh.
He's wondering if the cherries were a diet, was a example of a...
No. The answer is no. They are both full. They're perfect flowers. They have both pollen and nectar. In each one, but you still need another variety in order to pollinate to get fruit.
In most cases.
Thanks, guys.
In most cases. Jim is right. Yep.
Bye.
Yep. All right. But good try. That was great.
Except that it wasn't a vegetable.
Well, that's true, too. But
that's the one that puzzles me. I don't even know the answer to this one.
Okay. So you may.
I may.
Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, maple trees. I want to get back to that. I did not know that maple trees were dioecious.
I didn't either.
I'm going to have to check that one out.
Yep.
I didn't have time to go for more than one website. My bad. But we'll find out. Willow trees, mountain holly trees, and kiwi ash trees. Okay.
Right. And as I mentioned, seaberry, is also wind pollinated. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you again there, Jim, but you need one of each then when you plant them.
If you want fruit seabird.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's nice, not a bad looking plant, but yeah, normally we'd get it for fruit.
I eat those berries every morning.
Fresh?
No, frozen, of course, but they're...
Frozen whole?
Frozen whole berries. I put them on my oatmeal along with blueberries and black currants if I have them and goji berries and...
and milk?
It's yogurt.
Yogurt, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're going to go back to the phones here, but we'll allow Tammy to let me know what's happening.
So I might mention something about...
Please do.
...seaberry and dioecious-ness, because I may have told the listeners about this project we're doing in Goldendale, Washington, where we are taking German male seaberry plants because they like the climate here on the west side of the Cascades, and we're using them to pollinate Siberian female plants, and the resulting seeds I've been cleaning the last few days, and we'll plant those out and see what combination of characteristics we might have achieved in that.
Nice. Keep us informed.
I want to find a special song for that, Glenn, in your musical library.
Okay.
Something about the dance in dancing or something between.
Oh, yeah. You know,
I don't know if we can combine cultures of German and Siberian, but.
All right. We're going to go back to the phones. Good morning, Paul. You got an answer?
Squash.
I thought somebody would guess squash.
Curcubits.
But they are a different kind of plant in that they have male and male and female flowers on the same plant.
Well, so, what about curcubits then?
Nope, they're the same ways. But that is kind of, there are some, we'll give you partial credit here, because there are some hybrid cucumbers that have male and female plants, but I don't think many people plant those types.
Okay.
So that's it. But I wanted to make that is a good distinction there between squash, which has the male and female on the same plant. And
okay.
So now we kind of know the difference between those two.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
This is Tammy in the air room.
Yep.
When you buy a persimmon tree, for instance, that's dioecious, are you guaranteed that you're getting a plant that is going to bear fruit?
Yes, because all persimmon trees sold commercially should be grafted trees, and so they're a grafted variety, which in any case, I can't think of an exception to this, is going to be a self-fertile persimmon.
So did you already say that and I missed it?
No, you normally you wouldn't be planting a male persimmon unless you know you were a plant researcher or something.
Right. Uh-huh. So. I have another idea.
Yeah.
What about wisteria? I know it's not a vegetable really, but do you know about that? We had one in our backyard and it never ever produced a flower. It was very disappointing.
I don't have any notes on that. I don't know, but
if it didn't produce a flower, then it wouldn't be. That wouldn't indicate that it was dioecious. It'd indicate that something was
not flowering.
Right.
Maybe it was producing a flower that I didn't recognize as a flower. Is that possible?
I don't know, but I've made a note.
Okay.
I will look at for that.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I want to move next to. Let's just do a little music break, and then we'll come back and see what Jim's been up to on the farm. staying warm. This is our local man, Monty. Monty Edmondson, actually, was winning the Blue Binos. Early something from him. 99 below. Whew, not going to get that cold.
No.
Nine below, Blue Binos. Okay, we got Corey to take a stab at the stumper. What's an example of a dioecious vegetable? You there, Corey?
Spit.
Pardon?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Spinach.
Yes, indeed.
Wow.
Very well done there, Corey.
Yeah, well, I knew it, but nobody was calling in with the answer.
Yeah. Great.
And I think beets are in that category.
No.
Also?
No, not beets.
Oh, no.
They both have compound seed, but no, that's not the case. Okay, that's great. So we've kind of handled two of the three that I have here, some species of hybrid cucumbers and spinach. There's one more, and maybe the most common grown in gardens. Not in every garden. Takes a little bit of space. That's a hint.
So you don't want any more answers? You want
there's one more answer. Yeah, we might as well. I'll tell them. You know, we got 5, 10, 9 minutes here.
Okay.
Good job, Corey.
Yeah,
we don't have a prize here, so.
Yeah, that's right. We should.
Yeah, then we'd really get calls, maybe. Okay, so you've been sorting seeds.
Yeah.
For one of the tasks.
Yeah, so, you know, fall.
Oh! Okay, let's get it. That's all right. Jeff, you got an idea?
Yes. Okay, my guess is asparagus.
That's it. Asparagus.
Wow. Awesome.
And you'll see the little berries on one plant. And in fact, oftentimes when you buy asparagus roots, they'll just sell the males. That's what you want.
Well, and sometimes I've gone out collecting wild asparagus, and definitely I can see one appears as different, you know, as
uh-huh.
the male.
And if you, of course, you should let your asparagus, the smaller stalks, grow and form the fronds, and then the female ones will have the little berries on them. You could grub those out if you wanted to, because they're not as big, but I never do. But the vast majority of what I have are the male plants. So, yes, very good. Well done.
All right.
So, asparagus, spinach, and a few species of hybrid kooks. All right.
Interesting. Yeah, so as you know, we grow fruit out at the nursery, and
yes.
The late fruit, we probably talked about this some already, but the very last fruit hanging on the tree is persimmon.
Mm-hmm.
We have a beautiful Hauchia persimmon in our yard that still has fruit on it. I mean, it's quite spectacular, really. I look at it every day. And I'm like,
would those be edible at this time, or would they just be frozen and then mushy, or what?
Well, if the weather we've had so far hasn't hurt them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're still good. But sadly, Hauchia in our climate doesn't fully ripen. It looks great and everything, but it just doesn't.
These are the oblong ones?
They're like acorn shaped,
yes.
Large fruit.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the difference. But what's been most fun for us has been our experiment with using CO2. Where we have taken a different, so we know about the Hauchia being an astringent variety. It has to be soft before you can eat it. If you dry it, it will remove the astringency. If you freeze it, it will remove the astringency. Or you can let it sit on the countertop like the ones you buy in the store, buy them firm, you let them sit on your in your room temperature, in a few days they get soft, and then they're very sweet and delicious. And when we were in Spain, we discovered that the Spanish have a big industry growing an astringent variety called Rojo Brillante, which is an old variety there, beautiful fruit, where they've made this industry where they take that persimmon, astringent type, they treat it with 95% CO2 in a chamber, most often like a walk-in cooler type space, and they remove that process in 24 hours removes the astringency from the fruit, but the fruit is still firm. So because we were not about to let something like this just go untried, we decided to do it at home. And we bought some large Ziploc bags. You can get the 2.5 gallon, 5 gallon bags. We at first rented a CO2 cylinder from a brewing supply place. And then we actually bought one because we thought this was such a promising method. And we took 5 different varieties of astringent persimmon and put them in the bags and put them in our bathroom, which was the one place we could keep a temperature of 68 or more, which was the required temperature.
Oh, I see. You just put a space heater in there or something?
Right. Yeah. And so remarkably, one of the varieties, Seijo, which is an old Japanese variety and is about the sweetest variety that we can grow here in the Northwest, turned out to just remarkable. It was like a different fruit. It wasn't like it would be if you let it get soft. It had like a melon like flavor, sweet, juicy, and just incredible.
I'm a little bit confused here, okay, in that normally they don't sweeten until they soften.
Well, you probably couldn't tell that because you can't eat them. So there's probably sweetness there. It's just
okay. And these are the acorn type.
Well, yeah.
That aren't as common in the stores.
That's right. You wouldn't find Seijo, you won't find in the store here. And the kind you do find, the one Hachiya,
yeah,
you could try eating it when it's firm, but it may have the sugar, whatever it's going to have, in the fruit, but you can't get past the astringency because it's just like your mouth just feels like it's full of cotton.
I've had that happen on your farm, I think, even.
Yeah. So the CO2 treatment is just—it's crazy. I mean, it just takes out the astringency, but leaves a firm fruit. And so, in Spain, they actually ship these fruit all over Europe.
Huh.
And it's very, very popular.
Well, how will that increase the marketability, or what? I mean, because you could get to the same result by letting it soften and ripen,
but then it's a different, then it's soft, and some people don't like that texture.
Okay.
So people like eating it firm. Yeah.
And how firm is firm? Apple firm, pear firm, peach firm?
I would say
plum firm.
Right. How about peach firm? It's not like hard crisp, you know.
Yeah, but it's not like an apple.
Not like an apple, but it's definitely firm and slices up very nicely.
And less firm than a Asian pear.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But fascinating, really.
You know, yes. You
know, so next year we're going to expand our experiment with this and
get some bigger bags.
Well, yeah. That probably, hopefully, maybe plant some more Seijo persimmons too.
Yeah. Right.
But that's the thing with it. The Rojo Brillante doesn't grow. We don't have it here, and it's a late ripening variety. And Seijo is early enough to be sweet in our climate. So it's kind of, you know, we're this is very interesting.
Well done, farmer scientist.
Yes, well, slightly less than the scientist, but at least we didn't have a gauge to measure the amount of CO2. We figured we were getting the right amount in there, but we didn't have a way to measure it.
Uh-huh.
Someday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was probably pretty nice going into the bathroom.
Unusual.
Right. Okay, well, Jimbo, we're out of time. Gosh darn it, what didn't we get to? Oh, a little bit of cold storage here I can mention in 30 seconds. I took my potatoes and onions and put them in a warmer place. They were in my garage, and that's an attached garage, and I just think it's going to get too cold there. So I put them where my persimmon are, in my honey house, which is a great cold storage now. I can turn on heat if I need to, but it was about 45 in there now, so...
Great.
Yeah, it's pretty happy with it there. I use it as my greenhouse starting later in the couple months, and then honey extraction.
Wow.
So, all right. Well, Tammy, why don't we go out with Frosty rather than the dirtbag theme? This is, I think it's Albert Collins' song. I don't remember now, but this is done by, Gatemouth Brown. That was it. So, Jim, you're here on in January?
Yep, planning to be.
I don't know what day it is here. It would be January 11th.
11th, yep.
So hopefully the weather will be just fine dandy and our gardens will all make it through.
Yep, yep. We'll have some more to talk about.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. That's our story so far. Be well.